Hi, everybody. Welcome to Summerlink 2020. My name's Ryan. I'm one of the student workers here. And I'm sorry we can't be doing this in person. We're back in the Psalms, again, thinking about how we survive and thrive in our relationship with God. And tonight, we've got Psalm 139. There is a handout. If you like handouts, you won't need it to follow the talk. But if you need it, it's on the website. You should have the link. But you will need the passage open, Psalm 139. I'm sorry if you've already read it on your Zoom call. Well done for being prepared. But now you get to listen to me read it as well. Psalm 139, starting from verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in, behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake, and I am still with you. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Do keep that open. I think that there are three reactions we could have to this psalm, three different ways of taking these verses. We could misunderstand it and love it. We could understand it and hate it. Or we could understand it and pray verse 23 and 24 in response. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Three possible reactions. I think if you took a survey of all the people who read this psalm, I reckon at least 90% would fall into one of those three categories. And which one you are depends entirely on how you take the central image of the psalm. The image that runs through the psalm is of God's hand leading David through his future. You can see it if you look down to verse 5. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Or down to verse 10. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. In verse 13, God uses his hand to bring you into existence. You formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. And in verse 16, his fingers penned the story of your life. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them. Verse 24, see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. David speaks this psalm as a model believer. His words to God, teach us what it means for us to have a relationship with God. And the image that helps us understand our relationship with God as we go through this psalm and as we go through life is one of God's loving embrace of his hand as he leads us on the way. And there's a way I think people go wrong on this image, and it's to do with how involved you think God's hand is in your life. Because if you spot these verses on the mantelpiece in a Christian friend's home, you might think that God's hand is there to give a motivational boost, as the verses are written out in calligraphy and surrounded by watercolor flowers. And you might think that they're there to make you vaguely hopeful for your future, as if most of the time, as we go through life, we make our own plans and our own way, and we work towards our goals. But every now and then, we need just a little bit of a steer, and God flexes his fingers to turn us in the right direction. But the image David has in mind is much more hands-on. It's less about the occasional pointer, a bit of good fortune that comes across you, and more like the way a parent would hold their child's hand as they cross the road. A big hand with a tight grip. Come on, we're going this way. And I want us to keep this image in our mind as we go through the psalm, because I think the detail of the psalm fits in really well around it. So the headline, as we think about the future, is that God's hand is safely clasped around us, taking us along the way. And in our discussions, I hope we'll bring up all sorts of areas that we'll be thinking about our future, things we're planning for next week and for next month and for the next decade. And my hope is that we'll be reassured by knowing God's hand around us, but also changed along the lines of verse 24. And that God would remove anything in us that would resist his hand. God knows us. God is with us. God leads us. The psalm is put together in four sections, each one of them 6 verses long. And I think the way it works is that verses 1-6 give you the theory, the big idea that the psalm explores about God. And then verses 7-18, we get the theory tested. And then verses 19-24, the response that flows out from the theory. So part 1, verses 1-6, God knows us. The theory in verses 1-6 is all about how ridiculously qualified God is to lead us through our lives. The hand that holds us knows us completely. Verse 1, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. The God that leads us knows us. The opening verse of David's prayer acknowledges that before God, he is an open book, as if God has searched through the catalog of David's mind with unrestricted access. And what makes verse 1 so remarkable is that these aren't tasks that God has simply begun with and made a start on. When we talk about us getting to know someone, what we really mean is that we know a bit about them, or for some people, we know a bit more. But for God, the process is in the past tense. He has searched us. He has known us completely and fully. In verse 2, he knows everything about our days, when we sit down at our desks to work and when we rise up to walk by the river. But he knows so much more than you could learn from a Find My Friends app and a shared calendar. He discerns our thoughts from afar. He knows our inner monologues. He sifts through every thought that pops into our mind, from the stupid things that we imagine when we're washing up the dishes, right through to the worries that keep us awake at night. The secrets that we keep hidden from everyone else, God just has to look across the room, and they're his. He knows them all. In verse 3, he knows the big steps of our life. He knows the path before us, what job we'll have. He knows the house that we're going to live in. He knows whether we'll be single or married. He knows which friends we'll still have in 20 years. He's acquainted with all our ways. These are the kind of verses you could spend all day thinking about. You just have to use a bit of imagination. Here's something you could try if you want to think about verse 4. Try to keep track tomorrow morning of 5 things that you say, the first 5 things that you say when you wake up tomorrow morning. And for each one of them, try to think, what must God know about me? What must he know about the thoughts in my head, the intentions of my heart, the purpose in my conversation, the circumstances I'm speaking in? What must God know about me to have known I would say those things as I did, even before they arrived on my tongue? O Lord, you have searched me and known me. Now, if verses 1 to 4 replaced the word God with Huawei, some of us would start to get pretty twitchy, because the psalm is saying that God has invaded your privacy and that he owns all your data. But verse 5 reassures us about how good it is that God knows us, because it tells us how God's knowledge informs God's hand. Verse 5, you hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. And when David said God hems us in, he's not thinking about the crochet skills you've been working on during lockdown or God tucking David into bed at night under the sheets. The word is used to describe a city that's surrounded and besieged on all sides. David's seen actual battles, so he knows what it means to have a fortified wall protecting you from an enemy. But I think you can get a similar sense of what it means to be hemmed in if you've ever seen a Zorb. I discovered Zorbs on camp. It's an adult-sized, inflatable plastic bubble that you climb into and wear like a backpack, and it covers kind of all around you. And the only thing that sticks out is your legs so that you can run around with this big unit and bash into other people. But you're so well protected that even when the 6'2" college athlete brings his 100 kilograms low and hard into a junior camper, the junior camper ends up in the hedge, and then he gets back up and he's fine. There's no harm. He's hemmed in. He's protected. God leads his people through life with a protective bubble on all sides. Nothing can do them harm when they're in his hand, hemmed in behind and before. And it's a wonderful thing that God knows us so fully, because now he's qualified to lead us. And that way he's qualified to lead us. He knows how to take us away from harm and to bring us safely through in the right direction. Maybe if we were a bit of an unknown to God, if we were a bit unpredictable and he didn't know what we were going to do, he could lose track of us for a moment. Or we could escape his grip, possibly, if we could surprise him. But if he knows us, he is in the perfect position to guide us and protect us. It's a position that none of us can say that we're in. Could you imagine being happy about verse 6 the way David is? David's reflection on God knowing him is that this knowledge is just beyond him, too high to attain. We cannot understand the ins and outs of how God hems us in and how he leads us along the way. And so as we think about our future, David's point in verse 6 is that we don't know the future. We don't know, but it is a wonderful thing, even though we don't know, because our life is in God's hands, and he knows what he's doing with us. So the image running through the psalm is of God's hand leading us through life, and he couldn't be any more involved. And it's not just the occasional steer or a bit of help when we run into trouble. God is entirely present, hemming us in behind and before, and laying his hands upon us as people he has searched and known. So you can see why some people might not like it when they start to understand what the image really is. Because when God's hand plays a part-time role, we get to be independent. We get to make decisions about what the future will look like. But if God is so involved in our lives to have searched us and to have known us, and so involved as to hem us in and guard us from danger on all sides, then we aren't the masters of our own destiny. And the knowledge of how life plays out and what the future holds is beyond us. Verse 6 clashes with the idea of the 10-year plan, or the hope that our lives will always progress forward in the same direction, the way that we want them to. We cannot know the future. We don't get to decide our future. But it is wonderful that our life is in God's hands. He knows what he's doing. And we'll think a bit more about how this plays out in part 2. But if you have questions about God's control or the influence he plays on your future, if you're wrestling with issues about God's sovereignty, let me point you towards talks from the RML weekend on sovereignty back from February. I'll put a link in the handout that you can click on. You can spend more time than we will in this psalm thinking about those ideas. But I don't think you can understand this psalm at all without seeing God's sovereign hand at work in our lives. God's sovereignty stands behind the challenge of these verses about how much we think we should be able to say how our futures play out. God's sovereignty is also leading us, and it's the thing that makes this psalm reassuring, because we are safe in his hands. So that's the theory. God knows us. He perfectly knows what he's doing as he's laying his hand upon us to protect us. But we don't have this knowledge. The future is beyond our understanding. So let's break there to discuss some of these things. I've put some questions that are really just suggestions on the handout for things that you might like to talk about, but don't feel bound by them if you want to talk about something else that's caught your attention from the verses. So off you go, discussion groups. You may have begun to touch upon this in your discussion, but verse 6 tends to be a problem for us, especially when we think about our future. Because if we don't know what our future holds, that is when the future starts to worry us. And if verses 1 to 6 are the theory, then we see the theory put to the test in verses 7 to 18, when the future doesn't go the way we might have hoped. So part 2, looking at verse 7 to 18, he's with us whatever happens from beginning to end. God's hand knows us, it hems us in and leads us through life. And the question David begins verse 7 with is about whether that's always true. Or are there some circumstances that would prevent God from leading and protecting us? Verse 7, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. Doesn't David's question in verse 7 put into words the worry that so often crosses our mind? Is there anywhere I can go where you're not with me, God? Is there anywhere where your spirit won't be able to protect me? Is there anywhere where I'm no longer going to be on the path that you've set for me? We might be optimistic about the future in public. As Boris has navigated the pandemic from number 10, he's spoken with confidence and positivity. He said, hands, face, space, get a test, and we'll be back to normal by Christmas. In public, we're positive, but privately, we worry. We worry that circumstances won't work out and that the future isn't going the way we'd like it to. And there are all sorts of circumstances that might make us think the theory falls apart. Verse 7 might be the question on the mind of a student waiting for exam results, or the furloughed worker waiting to know if they still have a job in October. But when David worries about what his future will be like, he thinks about God leading him, and all his fears are put to rest. David knows that wherever he goes, if he ascends up into heaven or down into the underworld, his Lord is with him. And in verse 9, if he spreads wings and flies off with the birds of the morning, wherever he ends up, anywhere in the world, even as far as the bottom of the ocean, even there, your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. You might be in full-on crisis. You might despair and say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night. But however deep the worry, however troubling the circumstances, God will not be hindered from leading you. Even the darkness is not dark for you. God knows us. God is with us. God leads us. I'd like us to try a little thought experiment to just put this to the test. I want you to imagine that you wake up to find yourself in an airplane seat, but you can't remember what's going on. You don't know how you got there. All you can tell is that the language you're hearing from the other passengers isn't from Europe. So you take off on the wings of the morning, and when you land 10 hours later, you start making some calls to find out what's going on. You discover that due to the pandemic, the airports have shut. That was the last flight for months. You find out that there's an apartment waiting for you with a crate with all of your stuff from home. And your loved ones have been informed that you won't be back for a while. You've gone away on business. Life, as you know, has been completely uprooted, and you've started again in a whole new country that you've never been to before. How do you think that you'd be in that situation? As you start unpacking the crate from your new apartment, you come to terms with your new life. How would you feel? It's not far from asking, how would you feel about being a missionary overseas? Would you panic? Would you pick up the phone and desperately try and undo the situation and make your way back? Or would you be able to say, even there, your hand shall lead me? And verses 13 to 18 are how we know that's true. How do I know that God can lead me whatever may come? Well, think about where the work of his hands in you started. Verse 13, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Verses 13 to 18 trace through God's presence in your life in three key stages. Three stages where God knows us, and three stages where God's hand is at work to lead us. Verse 16, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. So from when we were unformed substance, before we were a mix of cells in our mother's womb, when as yet we hadn't lived out any of our days in this world, as just as an aside, notice from these verses when God thinks that a human being has value. From the very beginning, he knit us together, and our frame wasn't hidden from him. He knew us back then. His hands crafted us together out of nothing to bring us into this world. So from the very beginning, but also through all of the days that he's formed for us on this earth. Every single day we walk this planet, from the day that we arrived in the hospital to the day your last breath leaves your body, all of it written out for us by God's hand. He leads us into existence. He leads us through all our days. And verse 18, even when we wake up after it's all over, when we open our eyes again at the resurrection, he is still with us. And the point David makes to convince us God really is there, whatever happens to us in this world, is to look at the stage that's already been completed. Look at yourself. Your body is evidence that God knows what he's doing. He knew enough to turn unformed substance into a living, breathing, thinking human being. And again, just notice how this is more than vague sentiment of my life is going somewhere and God's leading me. And it's not the sort of thing that you find on a fridge magnet and get some generic hope. God has told us very clearly where he's leading us, from the womb, through our days in this world, to the resurrection on the last day. You see very similar language used by Jesus to describe how he leads us in John chapter 10. I'll read verse 27 and 28. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. Knowing God in his hand totally changes the way that we think about our future. In our days in this world, there is nothing to guarantee us that life will go the way we want it to. Being led by Jesus, we might feel that the darkness has closed in around us, and yet we're not left to respond just with the blind optimism that this world does that offers no reassurance. Our Lord is leading us through this world and into eternal resurrection life, and we know he is. So we went into verse 7 realizing that we do not and cannot know our future. But in verse 17, the thing that turns David around is that he knows the God that does. Verse 17, how precious to me are your thoughts, O God. So do you see how it's okay to not know the future? Even for the things that we're most worried about, we don't know the future. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but God does. He is totally in charge of it. And so how precious to us are the thoughts of the one who leads us through this world by the hand. Let's break again to do the second set of discussion questions, and I'll see you in a few. Okay, we're back more briefly this time for part 3, looking at the final verses 19 to 24. So pray against an attitude that resists his lead. God knows us. God is with us through every circumstance, whatever happens, beginning to end. And so pray that we would not have the attitude that resists his lead. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. These final verses are the response that flows from knowing the God who leads us. And David arrives at a conclusion we might find shocking. But I think there are two things that help us to link these verses to the rest of the psalm. Firstly, the source of David's passionate response. Verse 20, they speak against you with malicious intent. Or verse 21, do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? David's prayer for judgment against those who have hated the Lord and risen up against him is because David has understood the rest of the psalm and what he's been saying to God. He's understood how kind and loving God is, the God who holds out his people, his hand to people that he might know them and lead them. And David is so passionate about his God, he knows how good it is that his hand is on his life. He's so passionate that he's incensed by anyone who would turn this God down. And I think these verses are helpful for us to dwell on whether we really have appreciated how amazing the God who leads us is and the fact that we're in his hands. Do we get it enough to be enraged against those who don't get it? And the second thing that helps us with these verses is David's final outbox. He is so desperate to be different as possible to the people around him who speak against his Lord. Verse 23, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. I'd love for our final discussion to be around these two verses. When David says, see if there be any grievous way in me, he means, see if there's any part of my life that wants to resist the way that God is leading me, anything in me that may be grumpy about where he's put me, or anywhere where I'm not content with how things have turned out, anywhere where I'm desperate for life to change and be different than it is under my God. David asks God to search his thoughts and know his heart and change his priorities, to change the way he thinks about the future, so that instead of David thinking about where he'd like his life to go, he asks God to lead him in the direction that God wants him to go. Lord, reveal to me where I'm living for my own plans and for my own life. Lead me in the way of the future that you'd have me walk in. And again, wonderfully, this isn't just vague sentiment where we're saying, trust God on the way, and we mean basically do what you want. And you might find it helpful in your discussions to remember verse 17 to see how you'd start to know what it means to embrace God's lead on your life. How precious to me are your thoughts, O Lord. This is a dangerous prayer to come to God with because you might end up scrapping all of your plans for your life, everything that you've got organized for the future in the bin, and come up with totally new ones. But the thoughts of the God who knows us are far loftier and far more precious than our own thoughts for the future. So why don't you turn back to discussion groups to chat about it, and please spend some time praying in response to this God as well.